Chapter 20. Tvervigi equals worst vigi. As we walked through the early morning streets of York, I ate my garlic bagel and told my friends about my dreams. Our new buddy Pottery Barn clanked along beside us, drawing disapproving looks from the sleepy locals, like, bah, tourists. At least my story kept TJ's attention, so he didn't pester too many Yorkshire folk with thank yous and handshakes. He said. I wish I knew why we needed the whetstone. I think maybe Odin discussed the Bulwark incident in one of his books, The Aesir Path to Winning, or was it The Art of the Steel? I can't remember the details. A big beast with green eyes, you say? And lots of teeth. I tried to shake off the memory. Maybe Odin killed the beast to get the stone? Or maybe he hit the beast in the face with the stone, and that's how he got the mead? TJ frowned. He'd propped his new glasses on the rim of his cap. Neither sounds right. I don't remember any monster. I'm pretty sure Odin stole the mead from giants. I recalled my earlier dream of about Thialar and Gialar's chainsaw massacre. But didn't dwarves kill Kvasir? How did giants get the mead? TJ shrugged. All the old stories are basically about one group murdering another group to steal their stuff. That's probably how. This made me proud to be a Viking. Okay, but we don't have much time to figure it out. Those glaciers I saw are melting fast. Midsummer is in like 12 days now. But I think Loki's ship will be able to sail long before that. Guys, Alex said. How about this? First we beat the giant, then we talk about our next impossible task. That sounded sensible, though I suspected Alex just wanted me to shut up so I wouldn't breathe more garlic in her direction. Anyone know where we're going? I asked. What's a Konungsgirtha? It means King's Court, TJ said. Was that in your travel book? No. TJ laughed. Old Norse 101. Didn't you take that class yet? I had a scheduling conflict, I muttered. Well, this is England. There's got to be a king with a court around here somewhere. Alex stopped at the next crossroads. She pointed to one of the signs. What about King's Square? Will that do? Pottery Barn seemed to think so. They turned their double faces in that direction and strode off. We followed, since it would have been irresponsible to let an 8-foot-tall pile of ceramics walk through town unaccompanied. We found the place. Hooray! King's Square wasn't a square, and it wasn't very kingly. The streets made a Y around a triangular park paved in gray slate, with some scrubby trees and a couple of park benches. The surrounding buildings were dark, the storefronts shuttered. The only soul in sight was the giant Hrungnir, his boots planted on either side of a pharmacy named, appropriately enough, Boots. The giant was dressed in his same quilted armor, his shaggy limestone beard freshly avalanched, his amber eyes bright with that can't-wait-to-kill-you gleam. His maul stood upright beside him, like the world's largest Festivus pole. When Hrungnir saw us, his mouth split in a grin that would have made masons and bricklayers' hearts flutter.
Well, well, you showed up! I was beginning to think you'd run away!
He knit his gravelly eyebrows.
Most people run away. It's very annoying.
Can't imagine why, I said. Hrungnir nodded at Pottery Barn.
That's your ceramic second, eh? Doesn't look like much.
You just wait, Alex promised.
I look forward to it,
the giant boomed.
I love killing people here. You know, long ago,
he gestured toward a nearby pub,
the Norse king of Jorvik's court stood right there. And where you are standing, the Christians had a church. See? You're walking on somebody's grave.
Sure enough, the slab of slate under my feet was etched with a name and dates too faded to read. The whole square was paved with tombstones, maybe from the floor of the old church. The idea of walking over so many dead people made me queasy, even though I was technically a dead person myself. The giant chuckled.
Seems fitting, doesn't it? Already so many dead humans here. What's a few more?
He faced TJ.
Are you ready?
Born ready, TJ said. Died ready. Resurrected ready. But I'm giving you one last chance, Hrungnir. It's not too late to opt for bingo.
Ha! No, little Enheri. I worked all night on my fighting partner. I don't intend to waste him on bingo. Mokkerkalfe, get over here!
The ground shook with a squishy thump, thump. From around the corner appeared a man of clay. He was 9 feet tall, crudely shaped, still glistening wet. He looked like something I might make in Pottery 101. An ugly, lumpy creature with arms too thin and legs too thick. His head no more than a blob with two eye holes and a frowny face carved into it. Next to me, Pottery Barn started to clatter, and I didn't think it was from excitement. Bigger doesn't mean stronger, I told them under my breath. Pottery Barn turned their faces toward me. Of course, their expressions didn't change, but I sensed that both mouths were telling me the same thing. Shut up, Magnus. Alex crossed her arms. She'd tied her yellow raincoat around her waist, revealing the plaid pink and green sweater vest I thought of as her combat uniform.
You do sloppy work, Hrungnir. You call that a clay man? And what kind of name is Mokkerkalfe?
The giant raised his eyebrows.
We'll see whose work is sloppy when the fighting begins. Mokkerkalfe means mist calf, a poetic, honorable name for a warrior.
Uh-huh, Alex said. Well, this is Pottery Barn. Hrungnir scratched his beard.
I must admit, that is also a poetic name for a warrior. But can it fight?
They can fight just fine, Alex promised. And they'll take down that slag heap of yours, no problem.
Pottery Barn looked at their creator like, I will?
Enough talk!
Hrungnir hefted his maul and scowled at TJ.
Shall we begin, little man?
Thomas Jefferson Jr. put on his amber-rimmed glasses. He unslung his rifle and pulled a small cylindrical paper packet, a gunpaper cartridge, from his kit.
This rifle has a poetic name too, he said. It's a Springfield 1861, made in Massachusetts, just like me.
He tore open the cartridge with his teeth, then poured the contents into the rifle's muzzle. He pulled the ramrod and jammed down the powder and ball.
I used to be able to shoot 3 rounds a minute with this beauty, but I've been practicing for several hundred years. Let's see if I can do 5 rounds a minute today.
He fished out a little metal cap from his side pouch and set it under the hammer. I'd seen him do all this before, but the way he could load, talk, and walk at the same time was as magical as Alex's skill at the pottery wheel. For me, it would have been like trying to tie my shoes and whistle the Star-Spangled Banner while jogging.
Very well, yelled Hrungnir. Let the Tvervigi begin!
My first task was my favorite one, getting out of the way. I scrambled right as the giant's mallet slammed into a tree, smashing it to kindling. With a dry crack, TJ's rifle discharged. The giant roared in pain. He staggered backward, smoke streaming from his left eye, which was now black instead of amber.
That was rude,
Hrungnir raised his mallet again, but TJ circled to his blind side, calmly reloading. His second shot sparked off the giant's nose. Meanwhile, Mokkerkalfa lumbered forward, swinging his tiny arms, but Pottery Barn was quicker. I wanted to credit the great work I'd done on their coil joints. PB ducked to one side and came up behind Mokkerkalfa, slamming both vase fists into his back. Unfortunately, their fists sank into Mokkerkalfa's soft, gooey flesh. As Mokkerkalfa turned, trying to face his opponent, PB got yanked off their feet and dragged around like a ceramic tail.
"Let go!" Alex yelled. "Pottery Barn! Oh, main fritter!"
She loosened her garrote, though how she could help without actually fighting, I wasn't sure.
Crack!
TJ's musket ball ricocheted off the giant's neck, shattering a second-story window. I was amazed the locals hadn't already come out to investigate the commotion. Maybe there was a strong glamour at work. Or maybe the good people of York were used to early morning Viking giant smackdowns. TJ reloaded as the giant pressed him back.
"Stand still, little mortal!" roared Hrungnir. "I want to smash you!"
King's Square was close quarters for a Jotun. TJ tried to stay on Hrungnir's blind side, but the giant only needed one well-timed step or one lucky swipe to flatten TJ into an infantry pancake. Hrungnir swung his maul again. TJ leaped aside just in time as the maul splintered a dozen tombstones, leaving a 10-feet-deep hole in the courtyard. Meanwhile, Alex lashed out with her wire. She lassoed Pottery Barn's legs and yanked them free. Unfortunately, she put a little too much muscle into it, just as Mokkerkalfa swung in the same direction. With the excessive momentum, Pottery Barn went flying across the square and smashed through the window of a store offering payday loans. Mokkerkalfa turned toward Alex. The clay man made a wet, gurgling sound in his chest, like the growl of a carnivorous toad.
"Whoa there, boy," Alex said. "I wasn't actually fighting. I'm not your..."
"Gurgle!"
Mokkerkalfa launched himself like a wrestler, more quickly than I would have thought possible, and Alex disappeared under 300 pounds of wet clay.
"No!"
I screamed. Before I could move or even process how to help Alex, TJ screamed at the other end of the courtyard.
"Ha!"
Hrungnir raised his fist, wrapped in his fingers. Struggling helplessly, was Thomas Jefferson Jr.
"One squeeze," the giant boasted, "and this contest is over."
I stood paralyzed. I wanted to break into two parts, to become a duality like our ceramic warrior. But even if I could, I didn't see how I could help either of my friends. Then the giant tightened his fist, and TJ howled in agony. Chapter 21. Fun with Open Heart Surgery. Pottery Barn saved the day. And no, that's not a line I ever thought I would use. Our ceramic friend exploded from a third-story window above the payday loan office. They hurled themselves onto Hrungnir's face, clamping their legs around the giant's upper lip and wailing his nose with both their vase fists.
"Bah! Get off!"
Hrungnir staggered, releasing TJ, who landed in an unmoving heap. Meanwhile, Mokkerkalfa struggled to get up, which must have been difficult with Alex Fierro imprinted on his chest. From beneath his weight, Alex groaned. Relief washed over me. At least she was alive and might stay that way for a few more seconds. Triage decision. I ran toward TJ, whose condition I wasn't so optimistic about. I knelt at his side, put my hand against his chest. I almost snatched my hand away again because the damage I sensed was so bad. A trickle of red etched the corner of his mouth like he'd been drinking Tizer, but
I knew it wasn't Tizer. "Hang on, buddy," I muttered. "I got you." I glanced over at Hrungnir, who was still stumbling around trying to grab Pottery Barn off his face. So far, so good. At the other side of the square, Mokkerkalfe had peeled himself away from Alex and now stood over her, gurgling angrily and pounding his bloody fists together. Not so good. I yanked the runestone from my neck chain and summoned Sumarbrander. "Jack!" I yelled. "What?" he yelled back. "Defend Alex!" "What?" "But do it without actually fighting." "What?" "Just keep that clay giant off her." "What?" "Distract him! Go!" I was glad he didn't say what again, or I would have worried that my sword was going deaf. Jack flew over to Mokkerkalfe, positioning himself between the clay man and Alex. "Hey, buddy!" Jack's runes pulsed up and down his blade like equalizer lights. "You want to hear a story? A song? Want to dance?" While Mokkerkalfe struggled to comprehend the strange hallucination he was having, I returned my attention to TJ. I put both hands against his sternum and summoned the power of Frey. Sunlight spread across the blue wool fibers of his jacket. Warmth sank into his chest, knitting his broken ribs, mending his punctured lungs, unflattening several internal organs that did not function well when they were flattened. As my healing power flowed into Thomas Jefferson Jr., his memories backwashed into my mind. I saw his mother in a faded gingham dress, her hair prematurely gray, her face stretched thin from years of hard work and worry. She knelt in front of 10-year-old TJ, her hands tightly clasping his shoulders as if she were afraid he might blow away in a storm.
"Don't you ever point that at a white man," she scolded.
"Ma, it's just a stick," TJ said. "I'm playing."
"You don't get to play," she snapped. "You play shoot at a white man with a stick, he's going to real shoot you back with a gun. I'm not losing another child, Thomas. You hear me?"
She shook him, trying to rattle the message into him. A different image. TJ as a teenager, reading a flyer posted on a brick wall by the wharf. "To colored men. Freedom. Protection. Pay. And a call to military service." I could sense TJ's pulse racing. He had never been so excited. His hands itched to hold a rifle. He felt a calling, an undeniable impulse, like all those times he'd been challenged to fistfights in the alley behind his ma's tavern. This was a personal challenge, and he could not refuse it. I saw him in the hold of a Union ship, the seas pitching as his comrades threw up in buckets on either side of him. A friend of his, William H. Butler, groaned in misery. "They bring our people over on slave ships. They free us. They promise to pay us to fight. Then they put us right back into the belly of a ship." But TJ held his rifle eagerly, his heart pumping with excitement. He was proud of his uniform, proud of those stars and stripes flapping on the mast somewhere over their heads. The Union had given him a real gun. They were paying him to shoot rebels, white men who would most definitely kill him given a chance. He grinned in the dark. Then I saw him running across no man's land at the Battle of Fort Wagner, gunsmoke rising like volcanic gas all around him. The air was thick with sulfur and the screams of the wounded, but TJ stayed focused on his nemesis, Jeffrey Toussaint, who had dared to call him out. TJ leveled his bayonet and charged, exhilarated by the sudden fear in Toussaint's eyes. Back in the present, TJ gasped. Behind his amber-rimmed glasses, his vision cleared. He croaked, "My left, your right." I dove to one side. I'll admit I didn't have time to distinguish left from right. I rolled onto my back as TJ raised his rifle and fired. Hrungnir,
now free of Pottery Barn's affections, loomed over us, his maul raised for one final strike. TJ's musket ball caught him in the right eye, snuffing out his sight.
Rawr!
Hrungnir dropped his weapon and sat down hard in the middle of King's Square, crushing two park benches under his ample butt. In a nearby tree, Pottery Barn hung broken and battered, their left leg dangling from a branch 10 feet above their head. But when they saw Hrungnir's predicament, they grinded their head against their neck with a sound like laughter.
Go!
TJ snapped me out of my shock. Help Alex! I scrambled to my feet and ran. Jack was still trying to entertain Mokkerkalfe, but his song and dance routine was wearing thin. That happens quickly with Jack. Mokkerkalfe tried to swat him aside. The blade got stuck on the back of the clay man's sticky hand.
Yuck!
Jack complained.
Let me go!
Jack was a little obsessive about cleanliness. After lying at the bottom of the Charles River for 1,000 years, he wasn't a fan of mud. As Mokkerkalfe stomped around, trying to dislodge the talking sword from his hand, I ran to Alex's side. She was spread-eagled, shellacked in clay from head to foot, groaning and twitching her fingers. I knew Alex didn't like my healing powers. She hated the idea of me peeking into her emotions and memories, which just happened automatically as part of the process. But I decided her survival outweighed her right to privacy. I clamped my hand on her shoulder. Golden light seeped through my fingers. Warmth poured into Alex's body, working its way from her shoulder into her core. I steeled myself for more painful images. I was ready to face her awful father again, or see how badly Alex had been bullied at school, or how she'd been beaten up in the homeless shelters. Instead, a single clear memory hit me. Nothing special. Just breakfast at Cafe 19 in Valhalla. A quick snapshot of me, stupid Magnus Chase, the way Alex saw me. I was sitting across the table from her, grinning at something she'd just said. A little glob of bread was stuck between my front teeth. My hair was messy. I looked relaxed and happy and utterly dorky. I held Alex's gaze for a second too long, and things got awkward. I blushed and looked away. That was her entire memory. I recalled that morning. I remember thinking at the time, well, I've made a complete idiot of myself, as usual. But it had hardly been an earth-shaking event. So why was it at the top of Alex's memories? And why did I feel such a rush of satisfaction seeing my dorky self from Alex's perspective? Alex opened her eyes abruptly. She swatted my hand off her shoulder.
Stop that. Sorry, my right, your left.
I dove one way. Alex rolled the other. Mokkerkalfe's fist, now free of Jack's blade, slammed into the slate pavement between us. I caught a glimpse of Jack, leaning in the doorway of the Boots Pharmacy, covered with mud and groaning like a dying soldier.
He got me! He got me!
The clay man rose, ready to kill us. Jack would be no help. Alex and I were not up to this fight. Then a pile of pottery hurtled out of nowhere and landed on Mokkerkalfe's back. Somehow, Pottery Barn had extricated themselves from the tree. Despite their missing left leg, despite their right vase hand being cracked to shards, Pottery Barn went into ceramic berserker overdrive. They ripped into Mokkerkalfe's back, gouging out chunks of wet clay as if excavating a collapsed well. Mokkerkalfe stumbled. He tried to grab Pottery Barn, but his arms were too short. Then, with a sucking pop, Pottery Barn pulled something from Mokkerkalfe's chest cavity, and both warriors collapsed. Mokkerkalfe steamed and began to melt. Pottery Barn rolled off their enemy's carcass, their double faces turning toward Alex. Weakly, they lifted the thing they were holding. When I realized what it was, my garlic bagel breakfast threatened to come back up again. Pottery Barn was offering Alex the heart of their enemy. An actual heart muscle, much too big for a human. Maybe it had belonged to a horse or a cow? I decided I'd rather remain ignorant. Alex knelt by Pottery Barn's side. She placed her hand across the warrior's double foreheads. "You did well," she said, her voice quavering. "My Tlatilcan ancestors would be proud of you. My grandfather would be proud. Most of all, I'm proud." The gold light flickered in the skull face's eye sockets, then went out. Pottery Barn's arms collapsed. Their pieces lost magical cohesion and fell apart. Alex allowed herself the space of 3 heartbeats to grieve. I could count them, because that gross muscle between Pottery Barn's hands was still beating. Then she rose, clenched her fists, and turned toward Hrungnir. The giant was not doing so well. He lay curled on his side, blind and gurgling in pain. TJ walked around him, using his bone-steel bayonet to cut the giant's sinews. Hrungnir's Achilles tendons were already severed, making his legs useless. TJ worked with cold, vicious efficiency to give the Jotun's arms the same treatment. "Tears, tush," Alex swore, the anger draining from her face. "Remind me never to duel Jefferson." We walked over to join him. TJ pressed the tip of his bayonet against the giant's chest. "We won, Hrungnir. Give us the location of Kvasir's mead, and I don't have to kill you." Hrungnir cackled weakly. His teeth were spattered with gray liquid, like the buckets of slip back at the pottery studio.
"Oh, but you do have to kill me, little Enherji," he croaked. "It's part of the duel. Better than leaving me here hobbled and in agony."
"I could heal you," I offered. Hrungnir curled his lip.
"How typical of a weak, pathetic Frey son. I welcome death. I will reform from the icy abyss of Ginnungagap. And on the day of Ragnarok, I will find you on the field of Vigridr and crack your skull between my teeth."
"Okay then," TJ said. "Death it is. But first, the location of Kvasir's mead."
"Heh,"
Hrungnir gurgled more gray slip.
"Very well. It won't matter. You'll never get past the guards. Go to Flam, in the old Norse land you call Norway. Take the train. You'll see what you're after quick enough."
Flam? I got a mental image of a tasty caramel dessert. Then I remembered that was flan.
"That's right," Hrungnir said. "Now kill me, son of Tyr. Go on. Right in the heart. Unless you are as weak-willed as your friend."
Alex started to say, "TJ." "Wait," I muttered. Something was wrong. Hrungnir's tone was too mocking, too eager. But I was slow to compute the problem. Before I could suggest we should kill the giant some other way, TJ accepted Hrungnir's final challenge. He jabbed his bayonet into the giant's chest. The point hit something inside with a hard clink.
"Ah."
Hrungnir's death gasp sounded almost smug.
"Hey, guys,"
Jack's weak voice called from over at the pharmacy.
"Don't pierce his heart, okay? Stone giant's hearts explode."
Alex's eyes widened.
"Hit the deck!"
Kablam! Shards of Hrungnir sprayed the square, breaking windows, destroying signs, and peppering brick walls. My ears rang. The air smelled of flint sparks. Where the giant Hrungnir had lain, nothing remained but a smoking line of gravel.
I seemed unhurt. Alex looked okay. But TJ knelt, groaning, with his hand cupped over his bleeding forehead. "Let me see!" I rushed to his side, but the damage wasn't as bad as I'd feared. A piece of shrapnel had embedded itself above his right eye, a triangular gray splinter like a flint exclamation point. "Get it out!" he yelled. I tried, but as soon as I pulled, TJ howled in pain. I frowned. That made no medical sense. The shard couldn't be that deep. There wasn't even that much blood. "Guys," Alex said, "we have visitors." The locals were finally starting to come outside to check on the commotion, probably because Hrungnir's exploding heart had shattered every window on the block. "Can you walk?" I asked TJ.
Yeah, I think so."
"Then let's get you back to the ship. We'll heal you there." I helped him to his feet, then went to retrieve Jack, who was still moaning about being covered in mud. I put him back into runestone form, which did not help my level of exhaustion. Alex knelt next to the remnants of Pottery Barn. She picked up their detached head, cradling it like an abandoned infant. Then, the three of us staggered back through York to find the big banana. I just hoped the water horses hadn't sunk it, along with our friends. Chapter 22. I have bad news and... No, actually, I just have bad news. The ship was still intact. Halfborn, Mallory, and Samira looked like they'd paid a heavy price to keep it that way. Halfborn's left arm was in a sling. Mallory's wild red hair had been shorn off at chin level. Sam stood at the rail, dripping wet, wringing out her magic hijab. "Water horses?" I asked. Halfborn shrugged.
"Nothing we couldn't handle. Half a dozen attacks since yesterday afternoon. About what I figured."
"One pulled me into the river by my hair," Mallory complained.
Halfborn grinned.
"I think I gave you a pretty good haircut, considering I only had my battle axe to work with. Let me tell you, Magnus, with the blade so close to her neck, I was tempted."
"Shut up, oaf," Mallory growled.
"Exactly my point," said Halfborn. "But Samira now, you should have seen her. She was impressive."
"It was nothing," Sam muttered. Mallory snorted.
"Nothing. You got dragged under the river and came up riding a water horse. You mastered that beast. I've never heard of anyone who could do that."
Samira winced slightly. She gave her hijab another twist, as if she wanted to squeeze out the last drops of the experience.
"Valkyries get on well with horses. That's probably all it was."
"Hmm."
Halfborn pointed at me.
"What about you all? You're alive, I see."
We told him the story of our night in the pottery studio and our morning destroying King's Square. Mallory frowned at Alex, who was still covered in clay.
"That would explain Fiero's new coat of paint."
"And the rock in TJ's head."
Halfborn leaned closer to inspect the shrapnel. TJ's forehead had stopped bleeding. The swelling was down. But for reasons unknown, the sliver of flint still refused to come out. Whenever I tried to pull it, TJ yelped in pain. Fixed above his eyebrow, the little shard gave him a look of permanent surprise.
"Does it hurt?"
Halfborn asked. "Not anymore," TJ said sheepishly. "Not unless you try to remove it."
"Hold on, then."
With his good hand, Halfborn rummaged through his belt pouch. He pulled out a box of matches, fumbled one free, then struck it against TJ's flint. The match burst into flames immediately.
"Hey," TJ complained. "You have a new superpower, my friend,"
Halfborn grinned.
"That could be useful."
"Right, enough of that," Mallory said. "Glad you all survived, but did you get information from the giant?"
Yeah, Alex said, cradling the head of Pottery Barn. Kvasir's mead is in Norway, some place called Flom. The lit match slipped from Halfborn's fingers and landed on the deck. TJ stomped out the flame.
You all right, big guy? You look like you've seen a draugr.
An earthquake seemed to be happening under Halfborn's whiskers.
Jorvik was bad enough, he said. Now Flom? What are the odds?
You know the place, I guessed.
I'm going below, he muttered.
Want me to heal that arm first? He shook his head miserably, as if he was quite used to living with pain. Then he made his way down the ladder. TJ turned to Mallory.
What was that about?
Don't look at me, she snapped. I'm not his keeper.
But there was a twinge of concern in her voice.
Let's get underway, Samira suggested. I don't want to be on this river any longer than we have to.
On that, we all agreed. York was pretty. It had good fish and chips and at least one decent pottery studio. But I was ready to get out of there. Alex and TJ went below to change clothes and rest up from their morning of combat. That left Mallory, Sam, and me to man the ship. It took us the rest of the day to navigate our way down the River Ouse and back out to sea. But the voyage was mercifully uneventful. No water horses stampeded us. No giants challenged us to combat or bingo. The worst thing we encountered was a low bridge, forcing us to fold down the mainmast, which may or may not have collapsed on top of me. At sunset, as we left the coast of England behind, Sam did her ritual washing. She prayed facing southwest, then sat down next to me with a satisfied sigh and unwrapped a package of dates. She passed me one, then took a bite of hers. She closed her eyes as she chewed, her face transformed by pure bliss like the fruit was a religious experience, which I guess it was.
Every sunset, she said, the taste of that date is like experiencing the joy of food for the first time. The flavor just explodes in your mouth.
I chewed my date. It was okay. It did not explode or fill me with bliss. Then again, I hadn't worked for it by fasting all day. Why dates? I asked. Why not, like, Twizzlers?
Just tradition.
She took another bite and made a contented, mmm.
The Prophet Muhammad always broke fast by eating a few dates.
But you can have other stuff afterward, right?
Oh, yes, she said gravely. I intend to eat all the food. I understand Alex brought back some cherry soda. I want to try that as well.
I shuddered. I could escape giants, countries, and even whole worlds, but it seemed I was never going to get away from Tizer. I had nightmares about all my friends grinning at me with red lips and cherry-tinted teeth. While Sam went below to eat all the food, Mallory lounged at the rudder, keeping an eye on the horizon, though the ship seemed to know where we were going. From time to time, she touched her shoulders where her hair used to fall, then sighed unhappily. I sympathized. Not long ago, Blitz had hacked off my hair to make magic embroidering thread for a bowling bag. I still had traumatic flashbacks.
Sailing to Norway will take us a few days, Mallory said. The North Sea can get pretty rough. Unless anybody has a friendly sea god they can call on.
I focused on my date. I wasn't about to call for Njord's help again. I'd seen enough of my granddad's beautiful feet for one eternal lifetime. But I remembered what he had told me. After Jorvik, we were on our own. No divine protection. If Aegir or Ran or their daughters found us, maybe we'll get lucky, I said weakly. Mallory snorted.
Yep, that happens a lot. Even if we get to Flom safely, what's this business about the mead having unbeatable guardians?
I wished I knew. Guardians of the Mead sounded like another book I never wanted to read. I recalled my dream of Odin offering me the whetstone, then his face morphing into something else, a leathery visage with green eyes and rows of teeth. I'd never faced a creature like that in real life, but the cold rage in its gaze had seemed uncomfortably, terrifyingly familiar. I thought about Hearthstone and Blitzen, and where Njord might have sent them to search for a rare stone. An idea began to coalesce, swirling into symmetry like a lump of clay on Alex's wheel. But I didn't like the shape it was taking on. "We'll need the whetstone to defeat the Guardians," I said. "I have no idea why. We just have to trust..." Mallory laughed.
"Trust? Right. I've got as much of that as I have luck."
She drew one of her knives. Casually, holding the blade by the tip, she threw the knife at my feet. It impaled the yellow planking and quivered there like a Geiger counter needle.
"Take a look," she offered. "See why I don't trust secret weapons."
I pulled the knife from the deck. I'd never held one of Mallory's weapons before. The blade was surprisingly light. So light, it might get you into trouble. If you handled it like a standard dagger, wielding it with more force than necessary, this was the kind of knife that could leap out of your hand and cut your own face off. The blade was a long, dark isosceles triangle, etched with runes and Celtic knot designs, the handle wrapped in soft, worn leather. I wasn't sure what Mallory wanted me to notice about it, so I just said the obvious. "Nice blade."
"Eh."
From her belt, Mallory unsheathed its twin.
"They aren't as sharp as Jack. They don't do anything magical, as far as I can tell. They were supposed to save my life. But as you can see..."
She spread her arms.
"I'm dead."
"So, you had the knives when you were alive?"
"For the last 5-6 minutes of my life, yeah."
She twirled the blade between her fingers.
"First my mates, they goaded me into setting the bomb."
"Hold on, you set the..." She cut me off with a harsh look, like,
"Never interrupt a lady with a knife."
"That was Loki egging me on," she said. "His voice among my crew, the trickster disguised as one of us. Didn't realize that at the time, of course. Then, after I did the deed, my conscience got the better of me. That's when the old hag appeared."
I waited. I'll admit, I wasn't following Mallory's story very well. I knew she had died disarming a car bomb, but a car bomb she had set herself? Seeing her as somebody who would do that was even harder than seeing her with short hair. I had no idea who I was looking at. She brushed away a tear, as if it were an annoying insect.
"The hag says, 'Oh, girl, follow your heart.' Blah, blah. Nonsense like that. She gives me these knives. Tells me they are indestructible. Can't be dulled. Can't be broken. And she's right about that, far as I can tell. But she also says, 'You'll need them. Use them well.' And I go back to undo what I did. I waste time trying to figure out how these bloody daggers are supposed to solve my problem. But they don't. And..."
She opens her fingertips in a silent explosion. My head buzzed. I had a lot of questions I was afraid to ask. Why had she set that bomb? Who was she trying to blow up? Was she completely insane? She sheathed her knife, then gestured for me to throw her the other. I was afraid I might accidentally toss it overboard or kill her, but she caught it easily.
"The hag was also Loki," she said. "Had to be. Wasn't enough for him to fool me once. He had to fool me twice and get me killed."
"Why did you keep the daggers then, if they're from Loki?" Her eyes glistened.
"Because, my friend, when I see him again, I'm going to sheathe these blades right in his throat."
She put the second dagger away, and I exhaled for the first time in several minutes. "Point is, Magnus," she said, "I wouldn't put my faith in any magic weapon, knife or otherwise, to solve all our problems. Whether it's Kvasir's mead, or this whetstone that's supposed to get us the mead. In the end, all that counts is us. Whatever Blitzen and Hearthstone are off searching for..." As if their names were an incantation, a wave surged out of nowhere, crashing across the ship's bow. Out of the sea spray stumbled two weary figures. Our elf and dwarf had returned.
"Well, well."
Mallory got to her feet, wiping away another tear. She forced some cheerfulness into her tone.
"Nice of you boys to drop by."
Blitzen was covered head to toe in anti-sun protection gear. Salt water glittered on his dark trench coat and gloves. Black netting circled the rim of his pith helmet, obscuring his expression until he lifted the veil. His facial muscles twitched. He blinked repeatedly, like someone who had just walked away from a car accident. Hearthstone sat down right where he was. He draped his hands over his knees and shook his head. "No, no, no." Somehow, he'd lost his scarf, leaving his outfit as black as hearse upholstery. "You're alive," I said, dizzy with relief. My stomach had been knotted up for days worrying about them. Yet now, looking at their shocked expressions, I couldn't savor having them back. "You found what you were looking for," I guessed. Blitzen swallowed.
I'm afraid so, kid. Niord was right. We're going to need your help for the hard stuff."
"Alfheim." I wanted to say it before he could, just to take the sting out of the word. I hoped I was wrong. I would have preferred a trip to the wildest corner of Jotunheim, the fires of Muspelheim, or even a public bathroom in Boston's South Station.
"Yeah,"
Blitzen agreed. He glanced at Mallory Keene.
"Dear heart, would you let your friends know? We need to borrow Magnus. Hearthstone has to face his father one last time."
Chapter 23. Follow the smell of dead frogs, to the tune of Follow the Yellow Brick Road. What was it about dads? Almost everyone I knew had a garbage father, like they were all competing for the Worst Dad of the Universe award. I was lucky. I'd never met my dad until last winter. Even then, I'd only talked to him for a few minutes. But at least Frey seemed cool. We hugged. He let me keep his talking disco sword and sent me a bright yellow boat in my time of need. Sam had Loki, who put the con in conniving. Alex's dad was an abusive, raging butthat with dreams of global dishware domination. And Hearthstone, he had it worse than any of us. Mr. Alderman had made Hearthstone's childhood a living hellheim. I never wanted to spend another night under that man's roof, and I'd only been there once. I couldn't imagine how Hearthstone would bear it. We fell out of the golden sky, the way one does when tumbling into the airy world of the elves. We landed gently on the street in front of the Alderman mansion. As before, the wide suburban lane stretched out in either direction, hedged with stone walls and carefully tended trees, obscuring the elf millionaire's multi-acre estates from one another. The weak gravity made the ground seem squishy under my feet, as if I could trampoline right back into the stratosphere. I was tempted to try. The sunlight was as harsh as I remembered, making me grateful for the dark glasses Alex had lent me, even if they did have thick pink Buddy Holly frames. There had been much snickering about this aboard the Big Banana. Why we had left Midgard at sunset and arrived in Alfheim during what looked like early afternoon, I wasn't sure. Maybe the elves observed elf light saving time. Alderman's elaborate gates still gleamed with their filigreed A monogram. On either side, the high walls still bristled with spikes and barbed wire to discourage riffraff. but now the security cameras were dark and motionless. The gates were laced shut with a chain and padlock. On either side of the gates, nailed to the brick columns, were matching yellow signs with glaring red letters. Property off-limits by order of Alfheim Police Department. Trespassers will die. Not prosecuted. Not arrested or shot. That simple warning, step inside these boundaries and you'll die, was much more sinister. My gaze wandered over the grounds, which were roughly the size of the Boston Public Garden. Since our last visit, the grass had grown high and wild in the rich Alfheim light. Spiky balls of moss festooned the trees. The pungent smell of scum from the Swan Lake came wafting through the gates. The half-mile driveway was littered with white feathers, possibly from the aforementioned swans. Bones and tufts of fur that might have once been squirrels or raccoons, and a single black dress shoe that looked as if it had been chewed and spit out. At the top of the hill, the once imposing Alderman Manor lay in ruins. The left side of the complex had collapsed in a heap of rubble, girders, and charred beams. Kudzu vines had completely overtaken the right side, growing so heavy that the roof had caved in. Only two picture windows remained intact, their glass panes smoked brown around the edges from the fire. Glinting in the sun, they reminded me uncomfortably of TJ's sniper glasses. I turned to my friends. Did we do this? I felt more amazement than guilt. The last time we fled Alfheim, we'd been pursued by evil water spirits and elfish police with guns, not to mention Hart's maniacal father. We may have busted a few windows in the process of escaping. I supposed it was possible we'd caused a fire to break out, too. If so, it couldn't have happened to a viler mansion. But still, I didn't understand how the place could have been so thoroughly destroyed, or how quickly such a suburban paradise had turned into this creepy wilderness.
We only started it.
Blitzen's face was again covered by netting, making it impossible to read his expression.
This destruction is the ring's fault.
In the harsh, warm light, it shouldn't have been possible to get a chill. Nevertheless, ice trickled down my back. On our last visit, Hearth and I had stolen a hoard of gold from a slimy old dwarf, and Vari, including the little dude's cursed ring. He'd tried to warn us that the ring would only bring misery, but had we listened? No. At the time, we'd been more focused on stuff like, oh, saving Blitzen's life. The only thing that could do that was the Skolfnung stone in Mr. Alderman's possession. His price for it? $1,000,000,000 in gold, because evil fathers don't take American Express. Long story short, Alderman took the cursed ring. He put it on and turned even crazier and eviler, which I hadn't thought possible. Personally, I liked my cursed rings to at least do something cool, like turn you invisible and let you see the Eye of Sauron. And Vari's ring had no upside. It brought out the worst in you. Greed, hate, jealousy. According to Hearth, it would eventually change you into a bona fide monster so your outside could be as repulsive as your inside. If the ring was still working its magic on Mr. Alderman, and if it had overtaken him as quickly as the wilderness had overtaken his estate, yeah, that wasn't good. I turned to Hearth. Is your dad... is he still in there? Hearthstone's expression was grim and stoic, like a man who had finally accepted a terminal diagnosis. Nearby, he signed. But not himself. You don't mean... I stared at the chewed-up shoe in the drive. I wondered what had happened to its owner. I remembered my dream of large green eyes and rows of teeth. No, that couldn't be what Hearth meant. No cursed ring could work so fast, could it?
You scouted around inside? I asked.
Afraid so.
Blitz signed as he talked, since Hearth could not see his lips moving.
Alderman's whole collection of rare stones and artifacts, gone, along with all the gold. So if the whetstone we're looking for was somewhere in that house, it has been moved, Hearthstone signed. Part of his hoard.
The sign Hearth used for hoard was a grasping fist in front of his chin, like he was clutching something valuable. Treasure. Mine. Don't touch, or you'll die. I swallowed a mouthful of sand. And did you find this hoard? I knew my friends were brave, but the idea of them poking around inside the walls of that estate terrified me. Definitely it hadn't been good for the local squirrel population.
We think we found his lair, Blitz said.
Oh, good. My voice sounded higher and softer than usual. Alderman has a lair now. And, did you see him? Hearthstone shook his head.
Only smelled him.
Okay, I said. That's not creepy.
You'll see, Blitz said. It's easiest just to show you.
That was one offer I definitely wanted to refuse, but there was no way I would let Hearth and Blitz go through those gates again without me. Why haven't the local elves done something about the estate? I asked. Last time we were here, they wouldn't even tolerate us loitering. Haven't the neighbors complained? I waved at the ruins. An eyesore like this, especially if it killed swans, rodents, and the occasional door-to-door sales elf, had to be against the rules of the neighborhood association.
We talked to the authorities, Blitz said. Half the time we've been gone, we've been dealing with elfish bureaucracy.
He shuddered in his heavy coat.
Would it surprise you that the police didn't want to listen to us? We can't prove Alderman is dead or missing. Hearthstone doesn't have any legal rights to the land. As for clearing the property, the best the police would do is put up those stupid warning signs. They aren't going to risk their necks, no matter how much the neighbors complain. Elves pretend to be sophisticated, but they're as superstitious as they are arrogant. Not all elves, of course. Sorry, Hearth.
Hearthstone shrugged. Can't blame the police, he signed. Would you go in there if you didn't have to? He had a point. Just the thought of traipsing through the property, unable to see whatever lurked in the tall grass, made jumping beans hop around in my stomach. The Alfheim police were great at bullying transients out of the neighborhood. Facing an actual threat in the ruins of a madman's mansion? Maybe not so much. Blitzen sighed.
Well, no sense waiting. Let's go find dear old Dad.
I would have preferred another dinner with Aegir's murderous daughters, or a battle to the death with a pile of pottery. Heck, I would have even shared guava juice with a pack of wolves on Uncle Randolph's roof deck. We climbed the gates and picked our way through the tall grass. Mosquitoes and gnats swarmed our faces. The sunlight made my skin prickle, and my pores popped with sweat. I decided Alfheim was a pretty world as long as it was manicured and trimmed and kept up by the servants. Allowed to go wild, it went wild in a big way. I wondered if elves were similar. Calm, delicate, and formal on the outside, but if they let loose? I really did not want to meet the new and unimproved Mr. Alderman. We skirted the ruins of the house, which was fine by me. I remembered too well the blue fur rug in Hearthstone's old room, which we'd been forced to cover with gold to pay the Wargild for his brother's death. I remembered the menu board of infractions on Hearthstone's wall, keeping tally of his never-ending debt to his dad. I didn't want to get near that place again, even if it was in ruins. As we picked our way through the backyard, something crunched under my foot. I looked down. My shoe had gone straight through the rib cage of a small deer skeleton. Ugh, I said.
Hearthstone frowned at the desiccated remains. Nothing but a few strips of meat and fur clung to the bones. "Eaten," he signed, putting his closed fingertips under his mouth. The sign was very similar to hoard, treasure. Sometimes sign language was a little too accurate for my liking. With a silent apology to the poor deer, I freed my foot. I couldn't tell what might have devoured the animal, but I hoped the prey hadn't suffered much. I was surprised wildlife that large was even allowed to exist in the tonier neighborhoods of Alfheim. I wondered if the cops harassed the deer for loitering, maybe cuffing their little hooves and shoving them into the backs of squad cars. We made our way toward the woods at the back of the property. The grounds had become so overgrown I couldn't tell where the lawn stopped and the underbrush began. Gradually, the canopy of trees grew thicker, until the sunlight was reduced to yellow buckshot across the forest floor. I estimated we weren't far from the old well where Hearthstone's brother had died, another place high on my never-visit-again list. So naturally, we stumbled right into it. A cairn of stones covered the spot where the well had been filled in. Not a weed or blade of grass grew in the barren dirt, as if even they didn't want to invade such a poisoned clearing. Still, I had no trouble imagining Hearthstone and Anderon playing here as children. Hearth's back turned as he happily stacked rocks, not hearing his brother scream when the Brunmigi, the beast who lived in the well, rose from the darkness. I started to say, "We don't have to be here." Hearth walked to the cairn as if in a trance. Sitting at the top of the pile, where Hearthstone had left it during our last visit, was a runestone. Othala, the rune of family inheritance. Hearthstone had insisted he would never use that rune again. Its meaning had died for him in this place. Even his new set of Rowan runes, the ones he'd received as a gift from the goddess Sive, did not contain Othala. Sive had warned him this would cause him trouble. Eventually, she'd said, he would have to return here to reclaim his missing piece. I hated it when goddesses were right. "Should you take it?" I signed. In a place like this, silent conversation seemed better than using my voice. Hearthstone frowned, his gaze defiant. He made a quick chopping gesture, sideways, then down, like he was tracing a backward question mark. "Never." Blitzen sniffed the air. "We are close now. Smell it?" I smelled nothing except the faint scent of rotting plant matter. "What?" "Yeesh," he said aloud. "Human noses are pathetic." "Useless," Hearthstone agreed. He led the way deeper into the forest. We didn't make for the river, as we had last time to find Anvari's gold. This time we moved roughly parallel to the water, picking our way through briars and the gnarled roots of giant oak trees. After another quarter mile, I started to smell what Hearth and Blitz had talked about. I had a flashback to my 8th grade biology class, when Joey Kelso hid our teacher's frog habitat in the ceiling tiles. It wasn't discovered until a month later, when the glass terrarium crashed back into the classroom and broke all over the teacher's desk, spraying the front row with glass, mold, slime, and rancid amphibian bodies. What I smelled in the forest reminded me of that, except much worse. Hearthstone stopped at the edge of another clearing. He crouched behind a fallen tree and gestured for us to join him. "In there," he signed. "Only place he could have gone." I peered through the gloom. The trees around the clearing had been reduced to charcoal stick figures. The ground was thick with rotting mulch and animal bones. About 50 feet from our hiding place rose an outcropping of boulders, two of the largest rocks leaning together to form what looked like the entrance of a cave. "Now we wait," Blitz whispered as he signed, "for what passes for nighttime in this dwarf-forsaken place. Harth nodded. He will emerge at night. Then we see. I was having a hard time breathing, much less thinking, in the miasma of dead frog stench. Staying here sounded like a terrible idea. Who's going to emerge? I signed. Your dad? From there? Why? Hearthstone looked away. I got the feeling he was trying to be merciful by not answering my questions.
We'll find out, Blitz murmured. If it's what we fear, well, let's enjoy our ignorance while we still can.
Chapter 24. I liked Hearthstone's dad better as a cow-abducting alien. While we waited, Hearthstone provided us with dinner. From his rune bag, he drew this symbol, Gabo. It looked like a regular X to me, but Hearthstone explained it was Gabo, the rune of gifts. In a flash of gold light, a picnic basket appeared, overflowing with fresh bread, grapes, a wheel of cheese, and several bottles of sparkling water. I like gifts, I said, keeping my voice low. But won't the smell draw, unwanted attention? I pointed to the cave entrance.
Doubtful, said Blitzen. The smell coming out of that cave is more powerful than anything in this basket. But just to be safe, let's eat everything quickly.
I like the way you think, I said. Blitzen and I dug in, but Hearth merely settled himself behind the fallen tree trunk and watched us. Not eating? I asked him. He shook his head. Not hungry, he signed. Also, G-E-B-O makes gifts. Not for the giver. For giver, it must be sacrifice. Oh, I looked down at the wedge of cheese I'd been about to shove in my mouth. That doesn't seem fair. Hearthstone shrugged, then motioned for us to continue. I didn't like the idea of him sacrificing so we could eat dinner. Just him being back home, waiting for his father to emerge from a cave, seemed like sacrifice enough. He didn't need his very own Ramadan rune. On the other hand, it would have been rude to refuse his gift. So I ate. As the sun sank, the shadows lengthened. I knew from experience that Alfheim never got fully dark. Like Alaska in summer, the sun would just dip to the horizon and pop back up again. Elves were creatures of light, which was proof that light did not equal good. I'd met plenty of elves, Hearth accepted, who proved that. The gloom intensified, but not enough for Blitz to take off his anti-sun gear. It must have been 1,000 degrees inside that heavy jacket, but he didn't complain. Once in a while, he pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and dabbed under his netting, wiping the sweat from his neck. Hearthstone fidgeted with something on his wrist, a bracelet of woven blonde hair that I'd never seen before. The color of the locks seemed vaguely familiar. I tapped his hand for attention. Is that from Inga? Hearth winced, like this was an awkward subject. On our last visit, Mr. Alderman's long-suffering house servant Inga had helped us a lot. A Huldr, a sort of elf with the tail of a cow. She'd known Hearth since they were both kids. As it turned out, she also had a massive crush on him, even kissing him on the cheek and declaring her love before she fled the chaos of Mr. Alderman's last party. We visited her a few days ago, Hearth signed, while scouting. She is living with her family now. Blitz sighed in exasperation, which, of course, Hearth couldn't hear. Inga is a good lady, the dwarf signed. But he made V's with both hands and circled them in front of his forehead, like he was pulling things out of his mind. In this context, I imagined the sign meant something like, delusional. Hearthstone frowned. Not fair. She tried to help. Huldr bracelet is good luck. If you say so, Blitz signed. Glad she is safe, I signed. Is the bracelet magic? Hearth started to respond. Then his hands froze. He sniffed the air and gestured, down! The birds had stopped chattering in the trees. The whole forest seemed to be holding its breath. We crouched lower, our eyes barely peeking over the top of the fallen tree. On my next inhalation, I got such a snootful of dead frog stench I had to repress a gag. Just inside the cave entrance, twigs and dry leaves crackled under the weight of something huge. The hairs on my neck quivered. I wished I had summoned Jack so I would be ready to fight if needed. But Jack wasn't good in stakeout situations, what with his tendency to glow and sing. Then, from the doorway of the cave came, oh, gods of Asgard. I'd been holding out hope that Alderman had turned into something not so bad. Maybe his cursed form was a Weimaraner puppy, or a Chuckwalla iguana. Of course, deep down I'd known the truth all along. I just hadn't wanted to admit it. Hearth had told me horror stories about what happened to previous thieves who dared to take Andvari's ring. Now I saw that he hadn't been bluffing. Emerging from the cave was a beast so hideous I couldn't comprehend it all at once. First, I focused on the ring glinting on its middle right foretoe, a tiny band of gold biting into the scaly flesh. It must have hurt badly, throbbing like a tourniquet. The end of the toe had blackened and shriveled. The monster's 4 feet were each the diameter of a trash can lid. Its short, thick legs dragged along a lizard-like body, maybe 50 feet from nose to tail, its spine ridged with spikes bigger than my sword. The face I had seen in my dreams, glowing green eyes, a snub-nosed snout with slimy nostrils, a horrible maw with rows of triangular teeth. Its head was maned with green quills. The monster's mouth reminded me of Fenris Wolf's, too large and expressive for a beast, its lips too human. Worst of all, tufts of white clung to its forehead, the last remnants of Mr. Alderman's once impressive hair. The new, dragonish Alderman pulled himself from his lair, muttering, grinning, snarling, then cackling hysterically, all for no apparent reason.
No, Mr. Alderman, he hissed. You mustn't leave, sir.
With a roar of frustration, he belched a column of fire across the forest floor, roasting the trunks of the nearest trees. The heat made my eyebrows crinkle like rice paper. I didn't dare move. I couldn't even look at my friends to see how they were taking this. Now, you may be thinking, Magnus, you've seen dragons before. What was the big deal? Okay, sure. I'd seen the occasional dragon. I even fought an elder lindworm once. But I'd never faced a dragon that used to be someone I knew. I'd never seen a person transformed into something so awful, so smelly, so malevolent, and yet so obviously correct. This was Mr. Alderman's true self, his worst qualities given flesh. That terrified me. Not just the knowledge that this creature could broil us alive, but the idea that anyone could have this much monster inside them. I couldn't help but wonder, if I'd put on that ring, if the worst thoughts and failings of Magnus Chase had been given a form, what would have happened to me? The dragon took another step, until only the tip of his tail remained in the cave. I held my breath. If the dragon went out to hunt, maybe we could dash into the cave while he was gone, find the whetstone we needed, and get out of Alfheim without a fight.
I could have really gone for an easy win like that. The dragon moaned.
So thirsty. The river isn't far, Mr. Alderman. Just a quick drink, perhaps?
He chuckled to himself.
No, no, Mr. Alderman. Your neighbors are tricky. Posers. Wannabes. They'd love for you to leave your treasure unguarded. Everything you have worked so hard for. Your wealth. Yours alone. No, sir. Back you go. Back!
Hissing and spitting, the dragon retreated into his cave, leaving behind only dead frog stench and a few smoldering trees. I still couldn't move. I counted to 50, wanting to see if the dragon would reemerge, but tonight's show seemed to be over. Finally, my muscles began to thaw. I sank back behind our log. My legs shook uncontrollably. I had an overwhelming urge to pee. Gods, I muttered. Hearthstone, I... Words and sign language failed me. How could I commiserate, or even begin to understand what Hearthstone must be feeling? He set his mouth in a hard line. His eyes glinted with steely determination, a look that reminded me too much of his father. He made an open hand and tapped his thumb to his chest. I'm fine. Sometimes you lie to deceive people. Sometimes you lie because you need the lie to become the truth. I guessed Hearth was doing the latter.
Hey, buddy,
Blitzen whispered as he signed. His voice sounded like it had been crushed under the weight of the dragon.
Magnus and I can figure this out. Let us take the hit.
The idea of Blitzen and me facing that monster alone didn't do much for my bladder problems, but I nodded.
Yeah,
sure. Maybe we can lure the dragon out and sneak in. You're both wrong, Hearthstone signed. We must kill him. And I must help.
Chapter 25. We devise a fabulously horrible plan. Worst place for a council of war? How about the collapsed well where Hearthstone's brother had died, in the middle of a creepy forest, in my least favorite of the nine worlds, where we could expect absolutely no backup? Yep, that's where we went. I brought out Jack and filled him in on the situation. For once, he did not squeal with excitement or burst into song. A ring dragon? His runes dimmed to gray. Oh, that's bad. Cursed rings always make the worst dragons. I signed along for Hearth's benefit. Hearthstone grunted. The dragon has a weak spot. The belly.
What's he saying? Jack asked. Among Hearthstone's friends, Jack was a stubborn holdout when it came to learning to read ASL. He claimed the gestures didn't make sense to him because he didn't have hands. Personally, I thought it was just payback for Hearth not being able to read Jack's lips, since, you know, Jack didn't have lips. Magic swords can be petty like that. He said the belly is the dragon's weak spot, I repeated.
Oh, well, yeah.
Jack sounded unenthused. Their hide is almost impossible to cut, but they do have chinks in their belly armor. If you could somehow get the dragon to roll over, and good luck with that, you might be able to stab me through and reach its heart. But even if you could, have you ever pierced a ring dragon's belly?
I have. It's gross. Their blood is acid.
I translated all that for Hearth. Jack, did the blood damage you? I asked.
Of course not. I'm the Sword of Summer. I was forged with a magical finish that resists all wear and tear.
Blitzen nodded.
It's true. Jack's got a nice finish.
Thank you, Jack said. Somebody here appreciates good workmanship. Piercing a dragon's belly won't damage me, but I'm thinking about you, Senor. You get one drop of that blood on you while you're cutting the dragon, and you're done. That stuff will eat right through you. Nothing can stop it. I had to admit, that didn't sound fun. Can't you fight on your own, Jack? You could just fly up to the dragon and ask it nicely if it will roll over, Jack snorted, which sounded like a hammer hitting a corrugated metal roof. Ring dragons crawl on their bellies for a reason, guys. They know better than to present their weak spot. Besides, killing a ring dragon is a very personal thing. You would have to wield me yourself. An act like that affects your weird... I frowned. You mean it affects you weirdly? No. You're weird. You're weird, I muttered.
He means fate,
Blitzen put in, signing as he spoke for Hearth's benefit. The sign for fate was one hand pushing forward, like everything was going along just fine, la-di-da, then both hands suddenly dropping into Blitz's lap like they'd run into a wall and died. I may have mentioned that ASL can be a little too descriptive.
When you kill a ring dragon, Blitz said, especially one who used to be someone you knew, you're messing with serious magic. The dragon's own curse can reverberate through your future, change the course of your destiny. It can stain you.
He said the word stain like it was worse than ketchup or grease, like dragon killing wouldn't come out of your weird, even with a good pre-soaking. Hearthstone signed in clipped gestures, the way he did when he was irritated. Must be done. I will do it.
Buddy,
Blitz shifted uncomfortably.
This is your dad.
Not anymore. Hearth, I signed. Some way to get Whetstone without killing the dragon? He shook his head adamantly. Not the point. Dragons can live for centuries. I can't leave him like that. His pale eyes moistened. With a shock, I realized he was crying. It may sound dumb, but elves were usually so in control and subdued about their emotions, it surprised me to know they were capable of tears. Hearth wasn't just angry. He didn't want vengeance. Despite everything Alderman had done to him, Hearthstone didn't want his dad to suffer as a twisted monster. Sieve had warned Hearth that he would have to come back here to reclaim his lost inheritance rune. That meant closing the sad story of his family, putting Mr. Alderman's tortured soul to rest. I get it, I said. I do. But let me strike the killing blow. You shouldn't have that on your conscience, or you're weird or whatever.
Kid's right, Blitz said. It won't stain his destiny as badly. But you, killing your own dad, even if it's a mercy? Nobody should ever have to face a choice like that.
I thought Samira and Alex might disagree. They might welcome the chance to put Loki out of our collective misery. But generally speaking, I knew Blitz was right. Besides, Jack chimed in, I'm the only blade that can do the job, and I wouldn't let the elf handle me. I decided not to translate that. What do you say, Hearthstone? Will you let me do this? Hearthstone's hands hovered in front of him like he was about to play the air piano. At last, he signed, Thank you, Magnus. A gesture like blowing a kiss, then a fist with the thumb under three fingers. M, my name sign. Normally, he wouldn't have bothered with my name. When you talk to somebody in ASL, it's obvious who you are addressing. You just look at them or point. Hearth used my name sign to show respect and love. I got you, man. I promised. My insides fluttered at the thought of killing the dragon, but there was no way I'd let Hearthstone take the fall for that act. His weird had already suffered enough, thanks to Mr. Alderman. So how do we do this?
preferably without acid dissolving me into a pile of Magnus foam? Harth gazed at the cairn. His shoulders sagged, as if somebody was piling invisible rocks on top of him. There is a way. Anderon. He hesitated at his brother's name sign. You know, we used to play around here. There are tunnels made by wild... Here he used a sign I'd never seen before.
He means Nyssa, Blitzen explained. They're like...
He held his hand about 2 feet off the ground.
Little guys. They're also called Hobbs, or Dsma, or Brownies.
I guessed he didn't mean the Girl Scout Junior type of brownie, or the baked chocolate kind. Hundreds used to live in the woods, Harth signed, before Dad called Exterminator. A chunk of bread swelled in my throat. A minute before, I hadn't even known brownies existed. Now I felt sorry for them. I could imagine Mr. Alderman making the call. Hello, Pestaway? There's a civilization in my backyard I'd like exterminated. So, the brownies' tunnels are still there? I asked. Harth nodded. They are narrow, but you could use one to crawl close to the cave. If we can taunt the dragon to walk over the spot where you are hiding... I could strike from beneath, I said. Right into its heart. Jack's runes glowed an angry chartreuse.
That's a terrible idea. You'll get showered with dragon's blood.
I wasn't crazy about the idea either. Hiding in a tunnel made by exterminated brownies, while a 5-ton dragon dragged itself overhead, presented all kinds of possibilities for a painful demise. On the other hand, I wasn't going to let Hearthstone down. Getting the whetstone now seemed almost beside the point. I had to help my friend get free of his horrible past once and for all, even if it meant risking an acid bath. Let's try a dry run, I said. If we can find a good tunnel, maybe I'll be able to stab the dragon quickly and scramble to the exit before I get splashed.
Humph.
Jack sounded awfully grumpy. Then again, I was asking him to slay a dragon.
I suppose that means you'd leave me stuck in the dragon's heart?
Once the dragon's dead, I'll come back and get you. Assuming I can figure out how to do that without getting destroyed by acid. Jack sighed.
All right. I suppose the idea's worth exploring. Just, if you live through this, you'll have to promise to clean me really well afterward.
Blitzen nodded, as if Jack's priorities made perfect sense to him.
We'll still need a way to draw the dragon out of his cave, he said, to make sure he crawls over the right spot.
Harth rose. He walked to his dead brother's cairn. He stared at it for a long while, as if wishing it would go away. Then, with trembling fingers, he reclaimed the Othala rune. He held it out for us to see. He didn't sign, but his meaning was clear.
Leave that to me.
Chapter 26. Things get weird. In Valhalla, we spent a lot of time waiting. We waited for our daily call to battle. We waited for our final glorious deaths at Ragnarok. We waited in line for tacos at the food court, because the Viking afterlife only had one taqueria, and Odin should really do something about that. A lot of Inheriar said waiting was the hardest part of our lives. Normally, I disagreed. I was happy to wait for Ragnarok as long as possible, even if it meant long lines for my Poyo Asada fix. But waiting to fight a dragon? Not my favorite thing. We found a brownie tunnel easily enough. In fact, so many Nyssa holes peppered the forest floor, I was surprised I hadn't broken my leg in one already. The tunnel we scouted had an exit in the woods outside the clearing, and another only 30 feet from the cave entrance. It was perfect, except for the fact that the passage was claustrophobic and muddy and smelled of, I am not making this up, baked brownies. I wondered if the exterminator had used a blowtorch to eliminate the poor little guys. Carefully, quietly, we laid branches over the hole nearest the cave. That's where I would hide with my sword ready, waiting for the dragon to crawl over me. Then we did a few dry runs, which weren't very dry in that damp crawl space, so I could practice jabbing upward with my blade and scrambling out of the tunnel. On my third try, as I crawled out gasping and sweaty, Jack announced,
21 seconds! That's worse than last time! You'll be acid soup for sure!
Blitzen suggested I try it again. He assured me we had time, since ring dragons were nocturnal, but we were operating so close to the dragon's lair, I didn't want to push our luck. Also, I just didn't want to go back into that little hole. We retreated to the cairn, where Hearthstone had been practicing his magic in private. He wouldn't tell us what he'd been doing or what he was planning. I figured the guy had been traumatized enough without me interrogating him. I just hoped his dragon lure worked, and he wasn't going to be the bait. We waited for nightfall, taking turns napping. I couldn't sleep much, and when I did, my dreams were bad. I found myself back on the ship of the dead, though now the deck was strangely empty. In his admiral's uniform, Loki paced back and forth in front of me, tisking as if I'd failed a uniform inspection.
Sloppy, Magnus. Going after that silly whetstone with so little time remaining?
He got in my face. His eyes so close I could see flecks of fire in his irises. His breath smelled of venom poorly masked with peppermint.
Even if you find it, what then? Your uncle's idea is foolishness. You know you can never beat me.
He tapped my nose.
Hope you've got a plan B.
His laughter crashed over me like an avalanche, knocking me to the deck, squeezing the air from my lungs. Suddenly, I was back in the Nissa tunnel, little brownie dudes frantically pushing at my head and feet, screaming as they tried to get past. The mud walls collapsed. Smoke stung my eyes. Flames roared at my feet, roasting my shoes. Above my head, drops of acid ate through the mud, sizzling all around my face. I woke with a gasp. I couldn't stop shaking. I wanted to grab my friends and get out of Alfheim. Forget the stupid whetstone of Bulwark. Forget Kvasir's mead. We could find a plan B. Any plan B. But the rational part of me knew that wasn't the answer. We were following the most insane, horrifying plan A imaginable, which meant it was probably the right one. Just once, I wished I could go on a quest that involved walking across the hall, pushing a save the world button, and going back to my room for a few more hours' sleep. Around sunset, we approached the dragon's lair. We'd now spent over a day in the forest, and we didn't smell so good. This brought back memories of our homeless days, the three of us huddled together in filthy sleeping bags in the alleys of Downtown Crossing. Ah yes, the good old bad times. My skin crawled with grime and sweat. I could only imagine how Blitz felt in his heavy anti-sun outfit. Hearthstone looked as clean and spotless as ever, though the Alfheim evening light tinted his hair the color of Tizer. As usual, being an elf, the most pungent body odor he produced was no worse than diluted pine sol. Jack weighed heavily in my hand.
Remember, Senor, the heart is located at the third chink in the armor. You have to count the lines as the dragon drags itself overhead.
Assuming I can see? I asked.
I'll glow for you. Just remember, stab quick and get out of there. That blood will shoot out like water from a fire hose.
Got it, I said queasily. Thanks. Blitzen clapped my shoulder.
Good luck, kid. I'll be waiting at the exit to pull you out. Unless Hearth needs backup.
He glanced at the elf as if hoping for more details besides, I have it covered. Hearthstone signed, I have it covered. I took a shaky breath. If you guys have to run, run. Don't wait for me. And if I don't make it, tell the others. We'll tell them, Blitzen promised. He sounded like he knew what I wanted to say to everybody, which was good, because I didn't. But you will make it back. I hugged Hearth and Blitz, which they both tolerated despite my BO. Then, like a great hero of old, I crawled into my hole. I wriggled through the Nissa tunnel, my nose full of the smell of loam and burnt chocolate. When I reached the hole near the dragon's lair, I balled myself up, grunting, shoving, and turning my legs until my head was facing the way I'd come. As bad as crawling out of this tunnel would be, crawling out backward, feet first, would have been even worse. I lay face up, staring at the sky through the lattice of branches. Carefully, so as not to kill myself, I summoned Jack. I positioned him along my left side, his hilt at my belt, his point resting against my collarbone. When I stabbed upward, the angle would be tricky. Using my right hand, I would have to lever the sword diagonally, guide the tip to the chink in the dragon's belly armor, then thrust it through, into the dragon's heart, with all my Inheri strength. After that, I'd have to scramble out of the tunnel before I was sautéed in acid. The job seemed impossible, probably because it was. Time passed slowly in the muddy tunnel. My only companions were Jack and a few earthworms that were crawling across my calves, checking out my socks. I started to think the dragon wouldn't go out for dinner. Maybe he'd call for pizza instead. Then I'd end up with an elfish Domino's delivery guy falling on my face. I was about to lose hope when Alderman's putrid smell hit me like 1,000 burning frogs kamikaze diving into my nostrils. Above, the woven branches rattled as the dragon emerged from his cave.
"I'm thirsty, Mr. Alderman," he growled to himself. "And hungry, too. Inga hasn't served me a proper dinner in days, weeks, months. Where is that worthless girl?"
He dragged himself closer to my hiding place. Dirt rained on my chest. My lungs constricted as I waited for the whole tunnel to collapse on top of me. The dragon's snout eclipsed my hole. All he had to do was look down and he'd see me. I'd be toasted like a Nissa.
"I can't leave," Mr. Alderman muttered. "The treasure must be guarded. The neighbors can't trust them."
He snarled in frustration.
"Back then, Mr. Alderman. Back to your duties."
Before he could retreat, from somewhere in the woods, a bright flash of light painted the dragon's snout amber, the color of Hearthstone's rune magic. The dragon hissed. Smoke curled between his teeth.
"What was that? Who is there?"
"Father!"
The voice turned my marrow to ice. The sound echoed, weak and plaintive, like a child calling from the bottom of a well.
"No!"
The dragon stomped the ground, shaking the earthworms off my socks.
"Impossible! You are not here!"
"Come to me, father!"
The voice pleaded again. I'd never known Andoron, Hearth's dead brother, but I guessed I was hearing his voice. Had Hearthstone used the Othola rune to summon an illusion? Or had he managed something even more terrible? I wondered where elves went when they died, and if their spirits could be brought back to haunt the living.
"I have missed you,"
said the child. The dragon howled in agony. He blew fire across my hiding place, aiming for the sound of the voice. All the oxygen was sucked from my chest. I fought down the impulse to gasp. Jack buzzed gently against my side for moral support.
"I am here, father,"
the voice persisted.
"I want to save you."
"Save me?"
The dragon edged forward. Veins pulsed on the underside of his scaly green throat. I wondered if I could stab him in the gullet. It looked like a soft target, but it was too far above me, out of my blade's reach. Also, Jack and Hearthstone had been very specific. I had to aim for the heart.
Save me from what, my precious boy?
The dragon's tone was tortured and ragged, almost human, or rather almost elfish.
How can you be here? He killed you.
No, said the child. He sent me to warn you.
The dragon's snout quivered. He lowered his head like a threatened dog.
He sent you? He is your enemy. My enemy.
No, father, said Andoran. Please listen. He has given me a chance to persuade you. We can be together in the next life. You can redeem yourself, save yourself, if you willingly give up the ring.
The ring! I knew it. Show yourself, deceiver.
The dragon's neck was so close now. I could slide Jack's blade right up to its carotid artery and... Jack hummed a warning in my mind. No, not yet. I wished I could see what was happening at the edge of the clearing. I realized Hearth had not just created a magic distraction. He had summoned the spirit of Andoran, hoping against hope that his brother might be able to save their father from his wretched fate. Even now, after all Alderman had done to him, Hearthstone was willing to give his dad a chance at redemption, even if it meant standing in his brother's shadow one last time.